5:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the inequities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
To get to and so little time on this edition of Sunday Sermons. Barrero and Brianne Burdett with you until 11 o'clock this morning. Cake Show is back as well, and we're delighted that you are joining us on this already warm Sunday morning. Toss-up question that I'm hoping I can get some emails on via the rebooted Bradshaw and Brian inbox. For those in the audience who continue to punish their bodies by running every day, or maybe 5 days a week, or six, maybe you do 6 days a week and you give yourself a day off. I used to do 5 days a week back in the day because I guess I wasn't dedicated enough. And by 5 days a week, I would run. I wasn't a marathon guy. I'd like go do 4 or 5 miles a day, that kind of thing. Now I'm fast walker guy. Reality has set in. But if you're a confirmed hardcore running addict, what is more challenging for you? Is it running in near 100 degree temperatures in the sun, you know, in the heat of the day, although it was still like, I think, 97 degrees about 4 or 5 o'clock last night? Or is it when the wind chill, I don't know, temperatures minus 10, wind chill is minus 50, because we know there are people who refuse to bend, and I'm not here to rip you. I'm here to praise you, your dedication. But there are people who refuse to allow any weather conditions when it comes to extreme heat and or extreme cold get in the way of their regimen. But what I'm asking from those people is, what hurts more? A day like yesterday? I think the humidity is supposed to go up today, because I don't believe it was as hot as it was. It was the proverbial Arizona dry heat, I think. But originally, the forecast I saw indicated dew points are rising, and today is supposed to be stickier. There may be some weather people paying more attention to me than that, so let me know. Brianne, are you a runner or jogger?
I am not.
Okay. So you can't speak to this specifically.
I can't. I would have to think it maybe would be it has to be a little bit easier in the cold. I don't know how they could survive in this heat.
Now, yeah, I think you're probably right. In general, what troubles you more, the oppressive heat we had yesterday or when it gets oppressively cold? Or neither?
You know, I don't want to complain because I'm very happy we're in the summertime. We're here. But I think it might be more painful for the heat. You can't escape it.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm really starting to get bothered by as
What's
I
that?
Step upon my soapbox is the temperature and climate difference in the summertime between going outside and it's so hot outside, and then you come in here where it's a chilly 60 degrees, and I just can't win.
I'm glad you brought that up, because Friday I'm going to our little coffee stand to get a, we don't have foo-foo drinks, but I get regular coffee. And it's free. It's wonderful. Not complaining. And I ran into your guy, Fletch.
Sure.
And he says, I said something like, you like the furnace outside. And he says, but look at you. It's 100 degrees and you've got a sweatshirt on. What's wrong with you? And I say, well, Fletch, we're not outside.
Right.
To your point.
I got mine on today.
We're inside where the temperature almost, I tend to think for whatever reason, the way we regulate things here, the air conditioning seems to be actually colder when it's hot outside. Maybe it's compensating. So I get that from people every once in a while. Why are you in a long sleeve shirt when you're inside?
Because I'm freezing.
Yeah, because we're not we're not baking inside.
Right.
So emails, Bradshaw and Brian inbox, booth at KFAN.com on that very controversial subject. We will cover some Twins. No guests today. At least none scheduled. We will cover some Twins today, and I will explain to you why yesterday's victory is the Twins' worst nightmare, if it even matters at this point. We are going to touch upon your Minnesota Vikings. I have a couple thoughts there as we continue to accumulate cornerbacks from that have been let go by other teams and how we should feel about that and why, to a certain extent, I think it might be a good thing. We'll try to discuss, despite the fact that these aren't all pro corners that we're adding here at the last minute. We've got guys who have played extensively, but not all pro corners. And we're going to talk, I would say, more golf today than we have in at least a year, perhaps 2 years, on Sunday sermons and bumper to bumper combined. All we're trying to do in this case is follow the stories that I think are the most interesting and that also give me a chance to rant. Let's start with the newsy part, which some of you may know, maybe a bunch of you do, even if you are a casual golf fan. John Rahm forced to withdraw from the Memorial Tournament, leading by six, after testing positive for COVID-19. Now, I believe the winner at the Memorial is going to receive somewhere between $1.6 and $1.7 million bucks. He ain't going to win that now, is John Rahm. That possibility is gone. He is asymptomatic, as I understand it, but he tested positive, and it appears that they do the old deal of if we get a positive test, we want a second test to be sure. And the results, I believe, of the second test came in just as Rahm is walking off the 18th green in Dublin, Ohio, at the Muirfield Village Golf Club. Reminder, he is the defending champion. He's not living check to check. So I'm not suggesting you should feel sorry for him exactly. He's going to be fine, but 1.6 or 1.7 million is 1.6 or 1.7 million bucks. He says, I'm very disappointed in having to withdraw from the tournament. This is one of those things that happens in life, one of those moments where how we respond to a setback defines us as people. Again, I would say there are setbacks and there are setbacks, but I get his point. I'm very thankful that my family and I are all okay. I will take all the necessary precautions to be safe and healthy, and I look forward to returning to the golf course as soon as possible. This, of course, in the COVID-19 era, even as we seem to be coming out of it, from a sports standpoint, is literally the worst case nightmare, especially in an individual sport where nobody can take John Rahm's place. And as I understand it, he had been notified last Monday that he would be subject to contact tracing protocols because he'd come into close contact with another person who was, had tested positive for COVID-19. So the way apparently the tour works, the health and safety plan has worked, and it's been largely successful on the PGA Tour. I think there's only been, if I'm not mistaken, there have only been like three or four positive cases confirmed. He can stay in the tournament, but he has to agree to being tested every day. He's also apparently restricted from using indoor facilities. He can't use the clubhouse, and apparently he cannot use the locker room either. That's one of the precautions. He had tested negative every day, but then he'd undergone a test. This is according to the ESPN.com account via Bob Herrig. He apparently, his most recent test was performed following the conclusion of his rain-delayed second round on Saturday morning and then before the start of his third round in the afternoon. Positive test comes in at 4:20 p.m. Central Time while he's still on the course. And at that point, apparently, then the medical advisor requests a confirm what they call a confirmatory test in the original sample to be sure that's not a false reading. That came back at 6:05 p.m. as he is finishing his third round. He'll have to isolate for 10 days. And unless he is negative on two COVID-19 tests 24 hours apart, that would put him in isolation until June 15, 2 days before the start of the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. He won the event in 2017. So the question, the obvious question, and I even see some emails that have come in on this from the listeners via the Bradshaw and Brian inbox, booth@kfan.com. Well, did Rahm get the COVID-19 vaccine? Apparently, when officials were asked, they would not disclose that information. But if you follow what the tour protocols have been, and they apparently align with CDC guidelines, players who are fully vaccinated no longer are subject to weekly testing. So by definitionally, then Rahm apparently has not been vaccinated once, twice, or at all. Vaccinated players also not subject to the contact tracing that Rahm was part of as well. I don't know. Are there people... Everything's political in 2021. We get that. But are there people bitter that he was removed? Are there people saying he should have had the opportunity to continue to play? I don't know why they would be bitter. I'm not here to dance on the fact that he didn't get vaccinated. I would say, you know, you want to give yourself the best shot at avoiding this moment. Part of the reason I'm not sure I'm ready to feel real sorry for him, and that I would view this as one of those setbacks in life that defines us as people. You could say it's a preventable setback, and I'd also say there's setbacks and there are setbacks. But I'm not dancing on it. But if he tests positive, whether he's asymptomatic or not, he's done. He's out. So is this becoming political that, you know, you're ostracizing him needlessly, and what's the harm? He's asymptomatic. He's not going to hurt anybody. Most people his age are fine, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. The PGA is doing exactly, in this case, I would argue, what it has to do. Now, there was some discussion about, oh, by the way, for the record, PGA Tour membership slightly above 50% fully vaccinated, according to PGA officials. There was apparently some speculation about, well, could he play by himself? Could he just, you know, you just isolate him totally? And when asked about that, I think PGA officials basically said, not going to work. We have no protocol for that. We have no precedent for that. And there's still potential ramifications, even legal ramifications. So, no, we're not going to allow him to play by himself. And then you're back to the issue of, well, if you allow somebody to play by himself, in some ways, might you be actually giving him an advantage for all the obvious reasons? You don't have to wait for the people. The road is always cleared for him, et cetera, et cetera. So a very unusual situation, worst case scenario, when, like I said, your leader, who's performed very well and also the defending champion, is left with being in exactly this, position. The quote, let me get the money quote here from Andy Levinson, the PGA Tour Senior VP of Tournament Administration. Throughout 50 events since the PGA's Tour returned to golf, there have been only four positive tests. That's what I call it, including, that includes Rahm, within competition. Rahm is the first positive asymptomatic case as part of the Tour's routine contact tracing protocols. There, it's not been made clear, by the way, who else might be involved. Well, I guess actually Saturday night, all those that have been in contact with Rahm, including Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, am I pronouncing that right? And their caddies were cleared through contact tracing protocols to proceed in the tournament. So the door has been opened to those others, including Cantlay. Well, I guess it's Cantlay and Morikawa now tied for the 54-hole lead, with Morikawa at 12 under par, three strokes ahead of Scheffler and Brandon Grace as well. So, because I did get a couple emails from people going, oh, was he vaccinated? No official word, but the way he was handled from a protocol standpoint would indicate that in his case he was not. And 50%, I wonder among the individual sports whether that's the low. I guess what else would we be comparing it to? I guess tennis, more specifically. What the percentage is. I know, like, in team sports, the percentages are, I believe, all higher than that, if I'm not mistaken. We got a lot of teams trying to reach and attaining that 85% threshold as well. So, to that extent, even though the COVID-19 pandemic is heading in the United States clearly in the right direction, heavily in the right direction, not so fast, my friend, as it pertains to PGA Golf Tour, because it does insinuate itself front and center into this discussion. As I mentioned, booth@kfan.com is the Bradshaw and Brian inbox. We are not done. No, we are not done with golf talk. By the way, if you want to get in on this subject, if you are a golf fan, let me know. You can email us. If you are a runner, or you're just somebody who likes to do whatever physical activity they like in the outdoors, and want to answer the question, extreme heat or extreme cold more challenging to you? Because we know about extreme cold, and the last couple of days we are being reminded of extreme heat. It's not a complaint. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just observing it, and I'm curious to know how that works for various people. I did my power walk, nature walk yesterday, tweeted out a photo about a tool I use that I get mocked for, by the way, by younger people than me, mocked for it, that I don't understand, because I'm a big believer in you use whatever tools you can to keep you more comfortable in difficult conditions. And what I was interested in, this was at about, I waited, this is like 6:30 maybe even a quarter to seven. And on a very popular path that I use, it was an utter ghost town. There was almost nobody out there. Nobody out there cycling. Nobody out there running. And almost nobody out there walking as well, which surprised me a little bit, given how hardy we're supposed to be. So maybe that means heat is a bigger problem than extreme cold. We'll mix in phone calls. We'll get to the other golf controversy. We will cover Twins. We'll cover Vikings. And who knows what else? It's a two-hour edition. Guest?
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Fran!
Maybe you could see.
Mormons is back on The Fan, 800-320-5326. Also can reach us at 651-989-5326, whichever number will indeed work for you. Heat versus cold. I run outside almost every day. I have to say that running in the extreme cold is much easier than running in the heat. You can always put on extra layers in the cold, and eventually you'll warm up. In the heat, you cannot take off enough layers to make yourself comfortable. The heat also makes breathing very difficult. That's Zach from Chaska. That makes some sense, I guess. Although, I guess it depends on what the activity is that you're doing outside. I just, even walking when it's, you know, minus a wind chill like minus 50, and I understand, same thing. You put layers, you get smart, there's a lot of ways to do it. But it would not work for me. I bought one of those, you can get them all over the place, like Dick's Sporting Goods. And I don't know the official name for them. I call mine a chamois. It's really not a chamois, but I call it the Wonder Chamois. And it's basically a towel that holds a lot of moisture. You know, you buy it dry, obviously, and then you saturate it. And there's different sizes. And then you do it any way you want. You can wrap it around your neck and walk. What I like to do is then occasionally you just basically take your cap out. I wipe my whole head from the thing. There's some people who mock the concept, say, well, that's wimpy if that's what you need. I'm going, what? It's a tool, man. I'm doing the work. Why can't
I?
Yeah, I'm trying to adapt. In bad weather, hot weather at the state fair, I've brought my Wonder Chamois from time to time as well and had a great deal of success with it. But you do get, depending on how you wear it, and I did almost wear it in a kind of a Lawrence of Arabia sort of style yesterday at times, and the few people I saw, you get a couple of strange looks, but I figured people would go, oh, well, he's just adapting, like you said. It's hot. It's extremely warm. Works for me. Find it very effective. The challenge with it is how quickly they dry out. That's the problem. And then you got, on your way, can you find a hose? Well, that's unlikely. You don't want to stop at somebody's house and say, hey, can I borrow your hose? You know, I need to get my Wonder Chamois moist. That's not going to work, I don't think. People are going to be suspicious of that, and I wouldn't blame them. I would be suspicious of it.
Honey, call the cops.
That's exactly right. So, and then you don't want to, like, dip it. There's, like, a couple of creeks that I walk alongside. Then you go, I don't think you want to dip the Wonder Chamois in there, do you? You don't even know what's in that creek.
You got to keep the integrity of the chamois.
That's it. And germs and all of that sort of thing, for sure. I'll take a phone call from Dave checking in from Cottage Grove. Dave, you're on The Fan. Hello.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
See, the key in winter activities is you can't stay warm walking. Once you break a sweat running, you can stay warm. So that's something you might want to keep
in mind.
Wait a
minute, say that again. Repeat that. I'm slow. It's a Sunday morning. Repeat that assertion.
Okay. In the wintertime, it's easier to stay warm running after you've broken a sweat.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
Walking, it's hard to break a sweat, even if you're walking briskly.
Right, that's true.
I run pretty much year-round, and I can tell you for myself, after about a half a mile to a mile in the wintertime, even on on winter days when it's 10 below, I'm fine.
Yeah, I believe that. That certainly, intuitively speaking, makes sense.
Okay. Another thing I'll add here, because I know you want to get to a lot of other callers. On the morning she was abducted, Ann Dunlap ran 10 miles.
Hello.
No.
Weather.
Say that again. You cut out right after you said Ann Dunlap.
I said that in the morning that she was abducted,
yes,
many, many years ago, she ran 10 miles in minus 10 degree weather. And I know whoever abducted her and murdered her knew that she would be severely weakened from doing that. Because running it, for me, running in the wintertime takes more out of me post-run than running in the summer.
Yeah.
I can recover quicker in the summer But in the wintertime, if you go out and run any kind of distance at all,
interesting,
in that severe cold weather, it just knocks a snap out of you the rest of the day.
That makes some sense. Thanks for checking in. Much appreciated. Yeah, I mean, all that makes, and I know I understand there's a big difference between running and walking. That's why I was asking specifically about runners. Emailer Jeff, subject line hats. The largest percent of your body heat, comes out of your head. Cap in winter, no cap in summer. Well, yeah, the dilemma in summer, and again, I'm not running, is I especially need the cranium protection from the sun. And even at this time of day, a portion of this route was in pretty heavy sun. But yeah, that I understand the point that he's making. I've also got one of those goofy hats that I hate the look of, but I do wear if it's going to be a lot of sun, where it's got the big flap on the back. You know, gives you a little. It's ostensibly a ball cap, but it's got a wider brim across the front to help the coverage, and then it's got the flap in the back. It's really, they're kind of dorky looking, to be honest. I've never been able to find one that looks cool, but if you need it badly enough, and sometimes I do, then you go ahead and you wear it.
I'm impressed by this adaptation and evolution that you're
I guess
going
I'm
through.
Probably just too self-conscious about this sort of thing and shouldn't even worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry.
All right, let's get to the other golf story, and because I know we have some golf insiders who listen to the show. In fact, I tried to text one of them, but he's probably playing golf right now. So for that reason, he has not responded. Either that or he is ignoring me. And, I, you know, from the beginning, this alleged feud between, is it Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka? Has had me a bit bewildered. Put it this way. I tend, when Pitchfork Nation decides that one person is the villain and the other is the hero, I'm often suspicious of that. And the beauty of being a casual golf fan is you're not in the middle of the culture so much that you sometimes can't see the forest for the trees. Because people keep telling me, and this goes back to that viral, you know, that video that went out where DeChambeau is walking behind Koepka during an interview, bugging him, and Koepka rolls his eyes, and it's become a great meme opportunity. Everybody has seen it and had fun with it. And I kept asking Garzy, now he's not a huge golf guy, but he pays more attention to it than I do. I said, well, you know, basically, what's the rap on DeChambeau? And as I understand it, it was just generally one of those guys who seems to annoy people. And then there's a thing about he wears metal cleats. And then I asked Garzy, was that illegal? And I don't think it is, but apparently it's annoying to people because he's, I don't know, the only, and there are guys who, I'm sure, there are people who just rub people the wrong way. But I guess I wasn't convinced that made Bryson DeChambeau the root of all evil. But in the culture, here's what happens. If you identify that the cool people are with Koepka, and it's cool to be on Koepka's side in this case, then sadly, for a lot of people who kind of blow with the wind, it's, oh yeah, well, I'm going to mock DeChambeau then because that I want to be cool. I want to be with the cool people who think that this guy is the root of all evil, and he's annoying, and so I'm with Team Koepka. So that's the backdrop to this thing. But now, apparently, speaking of the memorial, apparently, DeChambeau was in a position where a bunch of spectators, while he's playing, this was on Friday, he's getting taunted while he's playing. They're saying Brooksy, other comments, some made during his backswing. DeChambeau says he did not request that anybody be removed. But security, on-site security, did remove about, they ejected, apparently about 10 spectators on Friday. And so this got the whole thing, you know, the momentum back in the people talking about this ongoing brawl and this ongoing feud. What adds to it is the extra layer that's been added to it. And let me back up for a second. Historically, for me, I've been, as a both as a columnist and as a radio guy, in the group that tends to mock and ridicule just how sensitive golfers tend to be about any form of jeering or any form of, you know, shut up, I'm about to hit a golf ball, that kind of crap. Acknowledging, though, it's the protocol of the game. But I've tended to mock that because I've noticed the degree to which it comes up after a golfer makes a bad shot or has a bad round. And they don't want to face that they played badly, so they want to do the human thing, which is to lash out and blame it on other people. So I've tended to be in that group that thinks golf should ease up on all of that and sort of relax a little bit. That said, that the protocol still seems to be in place. And Koepka took it to the next level with some comments he made. And I don't know if he did this on Twitter or if he just said it in an interview. Let's so we don't get too far behind. Let's pause here, and I'll give you more details about exactly why I think Brooks Koepka is the fraud, or is becoming the fraud, in this ongoing silliness that is, I guess, giving, you could say, the PGA Golf Tour a lot of attention.
On the Fan.
Get it. It's a lot of fun. It's sport to pile on Bryson DeChambeau. Maybe he's earned it. Maybe he's earned a lot of what he's received over a period of time. Maybe Brooks Koepka historically has every right to be annoyed, and he's actually voicing an annoyance out loud that a lot of people have privately. I'll just add this. Whatever high road Brooks Koepka might have previously had, he's blown to smithereens. With his letting people know that he's willing to supply beer for the fans evicted from the Memorial Tournament on Friday because they were believed to have been taunting DeChambeau. I would suggest that that decision, whether it was for the laugh or for the moment to sort of get the whole thing done, keep the whole, quote-unquote, you know, rivalry going. If that's the right term, it probably isn't. The feud. Maybe that's a better way to look at it. The guy who looks like a fraud is Koepka. Let's remember that, again, if you're in that environment, presumably Brooks Koepka doesn't like it and wants people held accountable when fans taunt or when fans cross certain lines. But he's okay in this case because they're doing it to the guy he likes to irritate or gets irritated by, DeChambeau. Beyond that, let's remember, you guys remember what the pile of sunshine that Koepka was when Phil Mickelson won the PGA? Do you remember how that entire feel-good story regarding the fans, maybe a little bit too close, but all the sort of organic reaction to let's surround Phil Mickelson as he makes history on the in the gallery? You remember, you know what changed that? It wasn't that there were a lot of people going, ooh, that looks a little dangerous there. They got control of that crowd? It was the fraud named Koepka who changed that entire story to the point where then the PGA, this is after PGA uses the usual social media outlets, including Twitter, I'm assuming Facebook, all those, to offer up the imagery of people surrounding Phil Mickelson as he's about to wrap things up and as he is wrapping things up. They obviously at that point think it's pretty cool. They think it's one of those moments that people are going to remember, even if maybe there was a bit of a security lapse and maybe the folks weren't quite prepared for the numbers that were there. It was huge. It was, everybody was getting a kick out of it. Then Koepka, as I understand it, goes to the media, the wherever the tent is, and to speak to the media, and starts whining. Let me give you the quotes if I can find them. I had them here. Let me see if I can scroll through them. Yeah, here we go. Oh, by the way, I'm told also this was in between dropping a series of expletives. Somebody jammed Ricky, as in Elliot, his caddy. Ricky stopped unintentionally because he got drilled in the face, and then I got drilled in the back because he got stopped so quickly. But I don't know what someone tried to or what. I don't know what the deal was. There were so many people around. Yeah, it would have been cool if I didn't have a knee injury and get dinged a few times in the knee in that crowd because no one really gave a bleep personally. But if I was fine, yeah, it would have been cool. Yeah, it's cool for Phil. But getting dinged a few times isn't exactly my idea of fun. It's amazing how you lose your sense of humor when, and again, the thing, you know what was bugging Koepka the most, which he admitted later, is he didn't play that well down the stretch. That's what's bugging him, in all honesty. But if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt there, you say, well, you didn't particularly like the crowd deportment and maybe the way security wasn't equal to the task. And by the way, because of Koepka making such an issue of it, this sort of organic moment, which we so rarely allow to happen without having to evaluate it later on every other level, which is part of the reason we can't even have these moments, because there's so much fear that if anything untoward or even a little bit, you know, unexpected happens, there might be the need for a congressional investigation. We don't even get a chance to enjoy them. He's already on to being unhappy with security and presumably the way the fans behaved. Well, but fan behavior in which a player is disrupted during the backswing is okay if the guy who's being disrupted is a guy you don't like? What? I'll tell you what, man. Golfers are the biggest frauds on so many levels in so many ways, and this is another, just a classic example of it. And again, if you've been on Team Koepka about his opponent here, about DeChambeau, at least have the honesty, the decency to say, well, this isn't very consistent. Yeah, I got, you know, you can yuck along with him and say, good line. Good line. But if you believe in the silly rules of deportment as it pertains to how golf fans are supposed to behave, then you believe in them. You can't just believe in them selectively. It's okay to go over line if it's a guy that Koepka has identified, among others, as being the root of all evil in golf. What a fraud. I'm hoping somebody calls Koepka on it. I really do. Because you know and I know, I wasn't in that crowd, and maybe he was a little bit scared. But I guarantee you, he exaggerated what took place there in terms of nobody was hurt. He was not in any kind of real danger. He's just annoyed that he didn't win. And he grudgingly tried to give a little bit of the moment to Mickelson. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying be honest about it. Don't have selective rules about, if you are in the group, and maybe Koepka has been historically, says we need to loosen up on all this stuff. We're way too tight. We're way too anal. The game's got to grow a little bit. Some traditions are worth holding on to. Some not so much. Then that's fine, if indeed that's been the case. But I tend to doubt it in his case. I tend to believe it'll all depend on whose ox is being gored. And when his ox is being gored, how dare the fans? But when it's people, apparently, drunken idiots who've been encouraged, and now even more encouraged by what Koepka had to say, then it's a joke. It's just, I'm just kidding. We're yucking it up. It's embarrassing. Can he be sanctioned? I wish he could be. Like to think that he could be. But so try to rise above being with the cool people. Who I want to be with the cool people, and the cool people are ripping the guy who wears the metal cleats. He's annoying. He's a pain in the neck. And ask yourself whether this behavior shows any measure of consistency. For the single guy, there may have been a few people, even if Koepka hadn't mentioned the scene at the PGA, the finish, who might have said, that looked like it was really a little close to being out of control there. There may have been. But look it up, man. The whole what changed everything was him making the issue of it to the degree he did, to the point where the PGA, minutes after, well, maybe hours after, sending out photos from the scene, video from the scene, which clearly would indicate they weren't embarrassed by it. They thought it was kind of a cool reaction to this historical moment. They're apologizing because the whiny little Koepka had his feelings hurt and allegedly had a knee that almost got dinged. And people wonder why some of us can't stand this
radio station.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
Of Sunday sermons. We'll be here until 11, Cake Show 11, until 1 o'clock this afternoon as well. Breanne, what is the current listed temperature here as we approach 10 a.m. Central Daylight Saving Time?
Absolutely. It was 81.
81 correct. Already. So I think we're again going to approach 100. And then I think the supposed to get, is it slightly cooler tomorrow? I don't know when it's supposed to break exactly. But we had a lot of nice emails from people describing how they deal with heat, extreme heat, as opposed to extreme cold as well. A lot of emails pouring in regarding this latest golf controversy. I'm reminded by a couple of them that part of the issue with DeChambeau is slow play. I guess to which I would say, how do you distinguish that from the other slow play? But apparently that's part of also the beef against him. The discussion today isn't to say that there aren't legitimate beefs against him. The discussion today has to do with whether it's the whole debate's gotten rigged a little bit, and I'm officially bored with pretending that Brooks Koepka is some kind of hero here, especially as it pertains to this latest approach as well. You've destroyed any high road position you have when you're clapping for a player having his play disrupted. If you believe in the to that extent of the golf protocol, I don't know that I can talk much more about this. An hour of golf for me that might well be my limit, but I'll certainly continue to listen to the emails or read the emails and pass along some of them as well. We have a thing on the Bumper to Bumper show largely called the Pelf Scale, and many of you know what that is. If you don't, it's Pelf is short for Mike Pelfrey, a former Twins pitcher who had a drink of water with us and had struggles, it's fair to say. And what started appealing to us a little bit was the degree to which, after a bad outing, Pelfrey would hold himself fully accountable. He would say things like, it's on me, I was awful, I let my teammates down, I didn't give my team a chance, blah, blah, blah. And you say, you know what? Nice to see a player not point the finger elsewhere, a la Koepka. It's kind of cool. But then what happened with Pelf on such a regular basis is he was having to hold himself accountable time after time, start after start after start. And at some point, it occurred to us that the accountability is ringing hollow. Because ultimately, if you can't do anything about your last bad start, I mean, presumably accountability is about, I'm going to make it better. He couldn't make it better. And so we started believing that it was losing its impact a bit. But the inspiration was, let's start evaluating other, doesn't have to be just pitchers actually, other athletes on a Pelf scale in terms of how much they hold themselves accountable or do the exact opposite, kind of do an anti-Pelf. It was suggested Friday we turn it into the Pelf scale into a 0-10. 10 being, I mean, if you assume full 100% accountability is Mike Pelfrey, you give him a 10, and then you go along that particular scale. The problem with 0 to 10 is, I'm not sure, I think we need to be able to go into the negatives, because I'm not sure all zeros should be equal. And the inspiration for that observation is a Twins pitcher by the name of Matt Shoemaker, who, after a recent start, we were told, envisioned a very different outcome than what he had to accept, which was pitching well for, was it three or four innings? And then everything kind of fell apart for him in a single inning. I think he ended up giving up, I think, four runs. But the conclusion by the manager and by Shoemaker and others was, we kind of got singled to death. But we had fun with the quotes from Shoemaker, in which he envisioned, I can't remember who, I think it was Dozier, if he had actually not run hard and allowed Shoemaker to get a double play in the key inning, then the key inning would not have gone as badly as it did. And we said, well, that's nice, but that's not exactly high on the Pelf scale. That may be in the negatives because Dozier did run hard and you didn't get the double play. So it doesn't matter whether in your mind you got the double play if you didn't get the double play. Little did we know that it could get worse. Was it Friday night? The Minnesota Twins yielded 9 runs in the first inning. I think they gave up 4 more in the second. They were down 13 donut after a couple of innings. Eventually, I believe, lost 15-4. And somebody sent me this quote, which I assume was from after that game. The Star Tribune did not have a game story, a locally written game story on that game. But I'm having trouble locating exactly the start of this quote. But I'm assuming it was elsewhere, maybe Pioneer Press, maybe Associated Press, maybe out of Kansas City, although they'd be less interested. Matt Shoemaker. You tell me what this should get on the Pelf scale. And tell me if this is not further proof that 0 to 10 doesn't do it. You're going to need to go into the negatives from time to time. I'm a heavy sweater. I was sweating a ton and could not get my hand dry. Not making excuses, just being honest. Kept trying to dry my hand on my jersey and pants, but everything was soaked. Now, is it possible that in hot, humid conditions, that was exactly the case for Matt Shoemaker? Yes, I'm not going to rule it out. But I'm going to submit that when your last legitimately productive Major League Baseball season is 5 years ago, five, not Not one, not two or three, five. And when in your last 7 days, your last two starts, you have allowed in four and two-thirds innings, 13 earned runs, 12 hits, walked three, and given up a home run, you're not advised to go down this road. You're just not. And you're asking for special Pelf scale honors to the point where you almost wonder whether we need to rename the bit or we need to have two bits regarding the two extremes. We may have the Pelf scale to help measure accountability, and maybe we have the Shoemaker, what? My alliterative friends will come up with something that will attempt to designate how effectively you don't hold yourself accountable, how far you go to not hold yourself accountable. I mean, you can't make it up. You are more than unlucky if your ERA is over seven. And as I said, you've not had a legitimate baseball season as a pitcher since 2016. And by the way, if you're having trouble getting a grip of the baseball, why aren't you cheating like apparently every other pitcher is on every other team to get a better grip? I have to believe there's analytics cheating. Does our analytics department not give our pitchers the right information on how to slyly and effectively cheat with foreign substances to get a better grip on the ball, even in hot, sweaty circumstances as well? Heavy sweater. Baseball's a summer game, man. I don't know what to tell you. It's largely played outdoors. Temperatures heat up. But if you, like I said, have struggled to the degree you have, and I'm sure he's a great guy, I'm not sure it's a road particularly that you want to go down. It may well be. We're always looking for exact opposites. We may have here with this team the best example of perfect opposites when it comes to accountability and lack thereof from pitchers in the history of baseball. We might have it with Mike Pelfrey a few years ago on one end and currently Matt Shoemaker on the other. 800-320-5326, toll free, 651-989-5326. Steve writes, little disappointed with your two golf talking points. Instead of talking about spoiled players named Brooks and Bryson arguing, also, don't feel bad about John Rahm. He should have got his vaccine. I thought you were going to talk about Timmy Herron, our lumpy, leading the seniors tour. Did you see his pick in the strip looking very lumpy these days? LOL. Yeah, we have not missed. We have not purposefully ignored the lumpy story. We're saving it for tomorrow. And a great opening. Now part of the bumper-to-bumper top five at five tradition. Whenever Garzy is talking about golf, we have a good opportunity to delve deep into what Lumpy did, and we will indeed do exactly that. One other Twins subject I want to get to. We did win yesterday. We held off the Royals 5-4. And that ended, I believe, our most recent losing streak is four. We needed some good fortune. We were able to get a line drive double play to end the game on a ball that was scorched, I believe, to shortstop, if I'm not mistaken. And that ended the threat, the tying run on third base at that point. Here's why it was not a good victory, if it matters at this point for your Twins. All five runs scored on dongs. All five home run related. And that included a prodigious 449-foot moonshot by Miguel Sano. I think the Sano one won the game, ultimately. But bottom line here is, anything that encourages a bad habit that is not helping this lineup this year, whether healthy or hurt or whatever, is not necessarily a good thing. I'm an Earl Weaver guy. I've made that clear. I understand and appreciate the power of the long ball. It's why I wanted Joe Mauer to hit more home runs before it was clear that that wasn't going to be in his wheelhouse. There's nothing more lethal and more intimidating to the opposing team than when they're leading 4-2, your pitcher allows two runners on, and then a hitter on the opposing club hits a three-run dong. Takes the life out of you. There's a place for it. You have to have it. But there's a balancing act that also still, I would argue, needs to go on. And the proof is this year the Twins are either first or second in the American League in home runs. And yet they're buried. Is it 13 games out now? It's either 12 or 13, somewhere in there. They're buried. Done in early June. Why? Well, you even heard the manager talk about it. He's starting to mutter about it every once in a while in his own Bald Dalai Lama-like way. We need to string some hits together. We need to just get some good contact at-bats up there. That's the problem with a game in which all five of your runs come via homer. I think it encourages people to too many of the hitters to continue to free swing as opposed to just putting together enough good at-bats to do something with runners on the base paths. You remember that? Remember, it's supposed to be traditionally part of baseball, but it's pretty much gone around the baseball entirely. But we might be the worst of that particular extreme as well. Barrios mucking by, giving it innings, but still not good enough, and we find ourselves buried, taking on the Royals again today. And maybe they just don't have the hitters who can make that adjustment. I don't know. But when all our runs are via home run, you can celebrate it because a victory is better than a loss. But if it encourages the idea of we just swing away and we free swing, there's a lot of games against a lot of pitchers where you're not going to be able to hit the ball out of the park. The question is whether you can make some legitimate contact. Yes, perish the thought, move runners along, all that sort of good stuff. We'll come back and run some calls, 800-320-5326, toll-free, 651-989-5326. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is in booth at KFAN.com. We'll run through some of those. We've got some Vikings to get to before we are done as well. And then we'll prepare for Garzy and the Cake Show.
The Fan.
Is curious to know what B.B. King song we used to start the second hour of Sunday sermons. I believe it's called The Blues Come Over Me. The Blues Come Over Me. That's for emailer John. I hope he is still listening to the this edition of Sunday Sermons. A lot of golf talk early. Some baseball in the conversation. We're going to get to some football as well. And we will mix in phone calls, 800-320-5326. 651-989-5326 as well. You can get here either way if you would like to chat with us. Some people are coming up with some ideas for the negative PELF scale. Schubermetrics. Schubermetrics. Not bad. It's a good start. Emailer Nathan on the Twins. Home runs is all this team knows how to do. They play poor defense, can't run the bases well, can't pitch, cannot get clutch hitting, cannot get move runners along, but watch them hit those solo shot dingers. Well, we did get a couple. I think we had at least one. I think two run dongs yesterday. But I get his point, and no, we don't do much. There's really not much else we do well. It's true. Defense, when Buxton's in center field, obviously is considerably better than when you're working on your sixth center fielder. That's, to a certain extent, beyond their control. But we don't do that well. There's a lot of teams that don't run the bases that well, but we do get ourselves caught there. In our and our offense, as I said, without the home run, we're utterly and completely incapable. In a game in which that's the trend, I think we represent maybe the worst of it as well. Take a phone call from John checking in from Lakeville. John, you're on the Fan. Hello.
Dan, I just came in from a run a little while ago. My wife tells me you want to know what's best, the run or what's worse, running in the heat or the cold. And it's definitely the heat. And the simple logic behind that is, you know, when you're running in the cold, you're getting warmer, and that's good.
Yeah.
Running in the heat, you're getting hotter, and that's bad.
Yeah, I guess that simplifies it, and it dumbs it down to a place where even I can get it, and a lot of our audience can get it. I guess that makes some sense. And we were told by a number of people, obviously in the winter, you can at least wear layers to protect yourself, you know, smart layers that make some sense. And you can't, there's only so many layers you can strip down when it comes to running out in the public. So, you know, there's not much way out of that box.
Well, and the other thing is, it's sort of psychological. When it's cold, you know to prepare for it.
Right.
When it's hot, you know, you don't prepare for it. You just go out because it's warm. You can run in shorts and a singlet or something like that.
Right.
And it's going to be, you know, you're not worried about it, but you should be worried about
it. How far do you run regularly?
45 minutes. And that's usually about 6 to 7 miles.
It's a nice pace. Yeah. That's a nice brisk pace right there. And how old are you?
68.
68, man, good for you. And so, and how long have you been a runner, like for 35 years, 40 years, for however long you can remember?
Over 50. Yeah.
So, and your body's not breaking down at all?
It's all genetics.
Nice. That's impressive. Good for you. So you're just going to keep going till you can't.
You know, I run all year. I have gotten to the point where I won't run below zero.
Okay.
But that's the other thing. You know, with weather, you have to pick your times, too. You know, it can be below, but if it's going to be up to five, well, you're at five.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Thank you for the phone call. Ben Gessling would be disappointed because I think Gessling prides himself on running even well below zero. You know, he's probably the guy we should be talking to about this. And he's a track coach. He's running or cross country, maybe track too, maybe both. But he's definitely attuned to this stuff, understands this stuff, and I don't think he has any limits in terms of heat or cold that stops him from continuing his pursuit.
It seems like they're a different ilk because Christmas Day, of course, I was working, so I was driving home.
Yes.
Back to my home, and there was a runner on our road with a beard just full of icicles. It was below zero, and he just had a complete beard of icicles.
Yeah,
he did not care.
Yeah, I've seen some good pictures of that. Alan Page has occasionally tweeted out, done a selfie of the icicles forming around his beard as well. Brian is calling from the city of Minneapolis. Brian, hello. Thanks
hello,
for holding.
Dan.
Yes, sir.
Hope to see you at the state fair.
Well, I think we're locked in, man. I think, you know, fingers crossed, we all we all once again will be able to assemble.
Yeah. Before I have a question, but before the Cheetah interview was great, and they told about a pitcher who threw out a scuffed ball, didn't know what to do with it.
Say that again?
He told the story about
yes.
a pitcher
yes.
that got a scuffed baseball, didn't know what to do with it, wanted a new ball. So
that tells you everything you need to know right there, right?
Okay. Okay, my question, if the Twins continue at their current pace, can Mike Vec cancel contracts and go back to independent baseball?
It's a very fair question. Thank you for the call and the chuckle. We've all kind of wondered that. Is at some point Vec going to regret his association with a product that is this flawed at this point? Don't know. Don't know what the contract says. Maybe next time we have Mike Vec on, we'll ask him. Because I just don't see, like I said, for a couple of weeks, I don't think there's any legitimate way out of the box at this point. I think we kind of are what we are. And whatever flaws they have, they've clearly been made worse by a spate of injuries. And that makes it literally impossible for me to view them. Well, you never know. You know, you get a little hot streak going, and then you go 30-10 over 40 games. I don't even think we're capable of that fully together, let alone in these stops and starts in terms of who's in your rotation and who's going to get healthy and is Kepler ready or not, is Buxton ready or not. Maeda clearly is another one. Even Pineda has had some issues too. So and the bullpen is just bad, pretty much no matter what we put out there on a regular basis. So I think we're in the abyss period. Guardsy and I, in fact, have already started putting together some plans, because when we're in an abyss baseball season, we have a great deal of experience with that, even this early. And then we try to come up with some alternatides and some other ideas to tide us over until we get to that magical date, usually late July, that signals the beginning of another football season, or at least football training camp as well. All that stuff is coming up. We'll get one more pause in here. And then I've got a couple. I do have actually a couple Vikings items I want to discuss, and a couple of emails that got my attention via the Bradshaw and Brian inbox booth at KFN.
On the Fan.
I grew up in a 5 newspaper town. By that I mean that in the formative years, first 12 years of my life, I was in Gary, Indiana. Now, Gary had a newspaper, still I believe has a newspaper, called the Gary Post Tribune. So that's one. That was an afternoon paper. I have to probably define what that means to people. Long time ago, there were newspapers that were available mornings. And then there was another whole set of newspapers, because we didn't have instant news and we didn't have cable news. We didn't have all those deals that might hit your doorstep at 4:30 p.m. that would give stuff that the morning paper couldn't get in because of deadlines. It would be stuff that happened earlier that morning, maybe even, depending on how good the deadlines were, into the early part of the afternoon, and it would land on your door, and you'd have some fresh stuff at 4 o'clock, maybe 5 o'clock. Maybe you'd even get to read it till 6 or 7. And then we were close enough to Chicago, Illinois, where you had access, if you wanted, to then 4 daily newspapers. That adds up to the 5 total I mentioned. You had 2 in the morning, Chicago, 2 in the afternoon. There were even more than that going back further, but back then, at my formative years, that was the case. I bring all that up as a preamble to, I get that it's an ever-evolving business that is desperate to find ways to make money, because all the old rules no longer apply because of online viewership, readership, and because the thing that used to really enhance the financial status of many newspapers, the classified ad, is almost irrelevant these days because there's so many other ways to do those. And so it has forced newspapers everywhere to be very creative about ways to make money, to make up for lost revenue. So I'm not blind to that. To a certain extent, a lot of papers have had to get off their high horse and make, you could say, deals with the devil, pacts with the devil, because you got to make, if we're going to exist, we have to find ways to add revenue. All that said, the USA Today made a decision this weekend that's getting some attention that is not illegal. They can do it. But is yet another reason why I have generally found that newspaper, and really Gannett to a certain degree, the lowest of the low, journalistically speaking. Apparently, they wrapped their weekend newspaper in a, you know how sometimes newspapers will have an extra section that they, the broadsheet newspapers, that they'll fold on the outside of the rest of the newspaper. Often it will be to feature a special section, something. In fact, I believe that's exactly what the Star Tribune did on the George Floyd anniversary, for example. And there are many, many other examples. Sometimes A-section stuff, sometimes it could be sports stuff, whatever. In this case, USA Today wrapped its newspaper with a fake cover about something called hybrid babies with antlers. And they did this because there is apparently a new Netflix show. I don't know the name of the show. Oh, it's called Sweet Tooth. You know anything about Sweet Tooth, Brian? It's a new show.
Unfortunately not.
Now, it's very firmly, I mean, very, very clearly, I should say, at the top of the section, in small type, but there, it reads advertisement. So you can technically say, well, it's right there. Any halfway smart person would be able to figure it out. But the main headline reads, hybrid babies born across the U.S., world reacts to new generation of half-human, half-animal children with both awe and concern. Now, I'm assuming this was a massive buy. And maybe a stroke of genius on the part of the people involved with this Netflix series. If anybody knows anything about this Netflix series, let me know. But the question is always on the table, at what point do you lower yourself in the name of we got to make money? Do you lower yourself journalistically to a point where you kind of defeated the purpose of even continuing to print and to publish? Might be reached with this one, but given who's doing it, it's not all that surprising. And, you know, that's become a big bone of contention, a lot of debate within the newspaper community as it pertains to, you know, historically, most newspapers, like in the front page of their sports section, have not put ads. It's been, all right, the ads will be in the inside pages. That's changed. And at first, it can be quite jarring. And then at some point, maybe you go, well, they got to do what they got to do. You got to make some money. But this one, a couple people brought this to my attention. And you just shake your head and you say, well, okay. I can't imagine a better way to kill credibility. We don't usually talk about these sorts of subjects. Sermons is generally more toy department related. But for the timeliness of it, I thought I would mention that. I don't even know how many of you, do you get a newspaper delivered at home, or are you all online?
I think we're all online. Okay. I haven't seen one in years.
I used to get three newspapers delivered. I now am down to two. And I feel like an oddball because there are very few people. In fact, like on our street, I don't think anybody else does. It's rarer and rarer. And I understand that for a lot of people. For me, it's still in the morning when I want to read the newspaper, traditionally, I still feel more comfortable doing it, being able to hold it in my hand. The rest of the day, I'm the same as anybody else. I'm reading online, actually. I'm not continuing to do it that way, but psychologically, I just sort of need it. I may reach a point where I don't. I don't know.
More habit for you.
It's habit more than anything else, and comfort in the morning. And even in the afternoon, because I'll get to one paper in the morning, and I'll try to get back to the other one in the afternoon, Wall Street Journal, largely. But it's another reason. To my horror about this wraparound fake cover about hybrid babies, the comeback is, well, nobody wants to get the newspaper at home anymore, so we're trying to find other ways to make money. I wonder what the percentage is now. I probably could find that out from some Star Tribune folks, what the percentage is of home delivery that still exists for people. Bradshaw and Brian inbox, if you still get a newspaper home delivered, or when you stop doing that. And do you miss any aspect of actually physically being able to hold the paper? I guess it gets back to how you feel about reading books or magazines, because a lot of people read books and magazines on an e-reader, right? That's what they do now. It's some way simpler. You can obviously take it with you. It's more compact. You can put a bunch of stuff on there. It's a different kind of act. I do a little of both. I'm e-reader guy sometimes, but I still sometimes like the book as well. But it's a dying art. And, of course, there is a disadvantage to going away from the physical broadsheet newspaper. Let me give you one. I know some folks who, historically, when they fly, they're a little taller. And they occasionally can become frustrated by the person in the seat in front of them reclining their seat as far as possible. And one of the ways they would attempt to subtly, or maybe not so subtly, convey the message that they're not very happy, is they would kind of open, this has got to be not a tabloid, because a tabloid this won't work, but a broadsheet newspaper. And then they would fold it so that, okay, they're looking at, the right-hand side pages. And it's kind of tall. And so the question is, well, what do you do with that, the tall part? Well, what you do is you very strategically allow it to slowly fold its way and move its way over the top of the seat in front of you, and even maybe onto the head of the individual in the front row. If you don't have that newspaper, if you with an reading newspaper and an e-reader, that ain't going to work. Not going to work. Not maybe at the top of the list of reasons why to keep the broadsheet paper, but it's indeed it's a lost art, man, for a lot of people. And for a lot of people, they don't even give it probably a second thought. And it's cheaper, right? Generally, even if you have e-subscriptions to newspapers, they're cheaper than getting the paper at home, correct? It has to be.
It has to be. How do you feel about the paywall that many...
I feel like I'm a fraud on it, because I, like everybody, get frustrated by it. But I say, we all know the big mistake many newspapers made in the beginning. They made the product free too long, because they didn't know what to do with this new thing, and people got spoiled and they got used to it. When you'd say, well, no, you have to pay to get the paper, the physical newspaper that you would get out of a bin or at the drugstore or wherever, at a bookstore. So they're offering you product. It costs money to manufacture that product, to pay the reporters who do the work. So to me, again, you make your own decisions on what you want to pay for, but the idea that you're frustrated when entities that are in business to A, make money, and B, to get the work done, that you're going to be mad that they are requiring you to pay. Don't you think?
I mean,
it's product. What happened early was too many newspapers didn't really know what to do with it, and so they gave it away, and then many newspapers now successfully have gone in the other direction and forced people to say a lot of what a lot of magazines, a lot of outlets will do now is, okay, we'll give you five free looks at our stories for a month. And then you get to the fifth one and they go, that's it. Now you're going to have to pay or we're not going to let you see that story. But you have to be, I think, prepared to do it. The hard part is remembering all those passwords and figuring all that good stuff out. Do we need one more break? Or are we good to the top?
We're going to the end.
Okay.
Yep.
I say that because I was it last week I completely eliminated a break. It was when we had Frank Viola on off the top, forgot about the break, and ended up.
And who forcing, am I to tell you what to do?
Well,
so
no,
I was like, oh, he's got it under control.
No, I didn't have that under control as well, and very correctly got ripped for it. Couple of emails I want to get into. Little ranting on the golf community. Really, not the golf community so much as Brooks Koepka, I should say, being, to me, kind of a fraud. Now he likes the idea of the guy who was whining about fan deportment at the PGA is now apparently applauding and enabling drunken idiots who are making fun of the guy that everybody thinks is cool to make fun of, Bryson DeChambeau, because he does a lot of things that he shouldn't do in golf, and he probably does do a few things that he shouldn't do. And the emailer guy, Gerald, writes, now you know how I feel about the NBA. I wanted more information from him. I don't know if he's still listening. Because I'm thinking to myself, well, it's a free country. You can like whatever sport you want. You can be bothered by whatever sport you want for whatever reason. But I'm not sure what I get what the analogy is. So I'm not exactly sure I understand how the comparison works here regarding a very specific issue as it pertains to golf. You can criticize pro basketball for a lot of things. I don't think stuffiness is one of them. But if he wants to give me more information about that, he can indeed let me know. Because, again, I'm not here to tell you what sports you have to like and don't. Emailer Rand, I still get the print strip in the Wall Street Journal in addition to several other online subscriptions. I enjoy print papers when I'm eating a meal. That's it for me, too. And drinking coffee. Eating and reading on a device is risky for spills and sticky fingers. That's also a fair point. Print is also a great way to quickly scan through multiple pages, articles, headlines. That's what I'm learning, and this is, and I'm sure they have experts who can explain to me why this is the case. The number of times I have been surprised by what is emphasized in terms of play in the print edition of the newspaper, Star Tribune, for example, compared to then, if in the morning I go and look online, those same stories are not emphasized. And I don't know if that's because many of those stories had already been online the night before, and so it's the constant thing, we got to refresh. But there are times, and this doesn't make sense to me, I've actually had difficulty finding stories not prominent enough at all that were main stories on the newspaper front pages, which I think is rather interesting. Emailer Mike, I'm 34, get the Sunday physical paper, spend the wee hours of the morning every weekend reading it, not front to back, but I find it cathartic. One thing that is always concerned with digital news outlets more and more is subtlety, sometimes having lead stories that are analysis. More and more people, I feel, take these stories in point of view literally. Monitor lead stories on CNN.com over a week's time and see how often it's marked as analysis. Cringeworthy. Fox.com, FoxNews.com, same sort of thing. The labeling business has changed dramatically in terms of what is presented as news as opposed to analysis. And I think there's a place for both of them, but the labeling of them has changed quite a bit. My mother writes, Lauren was a proofreader who remembers this as a job for the Mankato Free Press when I was young. I also had a paper route delivering the Star Tribune in Mankato. So I still subscribe to the Tribune for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and the Sunday New York Times. I have it, but even at 70 cents, every time I pick one up, I think of my mother, which is a good thing, and always keeps me connected to her. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Mark says we've had the same delivery guy for 30 years here in Tony Kenwood. Minnesota. Phil is fantastic, but when we hear his nocturnal mission underway, there are noticeably fewer stops getting the stoops, should say, getting the paper. We now tip him quarterly. Happy to get the strip 7 days a week. And New York Times on Sunday. Chuck writes, I find it difficult to read online newspapers. I still want the paper in print. We've lived in Rochester for 23 years. Rochester Post Bulletin has been reduced to only two in-print papers a week, which are mailed. Interesting. I didn't know that. Most of the paper now is filled with human interest stories of the Rochester Angle. The other thing that's happened, and I'm getting kind of far afield, but we're seeing more and more quote-unquote community newspapers or smaller town newspapers just disappear. They haven't found a sweet spot to make up the money, and they're just gone. And that's sad, because to a certain extent that means a lot of places, some of the daily stuff, like whether it's city council or village council, all that, the stuff that needs to get covered just doesn't get covered, or it just gets covered by bloggers, and some of them might be outstanding, others not so much. But you don't, there's like a vacuum there, which I don't think is very helpful as well. Tony writes, stop getting the newspaper delivered when the Duluth News Tribune went to Wednesday and Saturday only. Well, all these examples are exactly the point, that the business is dying in many ways. Now, the Star Tribune, as I understand it, I don't have many sources left there, but I believe they're still doing relatively well in a really tough environment. But that's another example of what's changed. A lot of formerly daily newspapers are coming out 2 or 3 days a week, that kind of thing, which is, I think, unfortunate as well for those of us who remember a very different day. And it shouldn't even be about political point of view or whatever, just the idea of having a lot of different outlets. Now, we have online a billion of them, but which ones you trust and which ones you don't, I think, very, very different questions. I mentioned I want to talk a little bit of Vikings. We're a little low on time now, and I want to get into this this week, as we are getting ever closer to training camp, believe it or not. The question of whether Vikings add another experienced corner, guy used to be with the Chiefs, I'll get his name in a minute, over the, this last week. And it's been a very different approach we're taking, where we're not adding greatness probably, but we're adding a lot more experience. And last year we were going to go really, really, really young. We were fine with the draft picks. We were convinced that we could reinvent the wheel. Fine. We didn't need, and in fact, it was almost embraced that youth, might infuse some extra excitement and enthusiasm to the club. And I'm not, again, going to sit here and say that we've added greatness at the cornerback position, but I view this as an admission that we blew it last year. We got a little haughty with ourselves that Zim can coach up anybody. And to that extent, I think this is a good adjustment. Whether any of these guys are great, they're probably not. But I'm a big believer, if you add experienced corners, to give yourself some options, especially with the number of injuries we tend to have at the position and the turnover, that bodes well. That might be a good thing. Definitely an improvement over the haughty approach last year, where it doesn't matter who we put in, we'll be able to handle it at a very crucial position. Whether Aaron Rodgers is in this division or not, it's still a very crucial position these days in the National Football League. Brianne, good to see you. Thanks for the help, as always. Guardsy is in the house, and I believe Pat Micheletti will be among his guests. They'll talk hockey, because Guardsy hasn't had a chance to talk to on that subject. We'll be back on tomorrow, 3 o'clock, bumper to bumper. Please join us then.